Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Ichabod's House. We are here with another riveting episode on the Ouija board. I'm Andy, and I'm here with my wonderful, handsome son, Ian, who's over here giggling at the way I say Ouija. And I'm sitting staring at my beautiful sister, Jen. We do have a couple things, though, a couple bits of business we need to pass along to you first. First important thing that we need to say is next week's episode, you're going to want to tune in because it is a vampire episode. It's a little vignette for you, and we're pretty excited about it. You want to add to that anything? Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a good one.
It is going to be a good one.
It's going to be a good one. It was done, written, and performed by classically untrained actors and edited by and sound effects added by newbies with minimal skills. So it should be a cornucopia of something moderately entertaining and not necessarily in the way one might think.
And I think some accents get a little confused too, which is good fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No one can quite decide what nationality they are.
Yeah. So. It's good fun. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do we have anything for our Google and Beyond segment? Do we have anything for that? We don't really this week, do we?
No. Okay. We're good.
Next, we have a new segment called Ichabod's Nose.
I have something for Ichabod's Nose.
Okay. What is it?
Fresh from the nose. The Low Files.
Oh, yeah.
Streaming available on YouTube. It's Rob Lowe and his two boys, and they kind of go around and do some paranormal stuff. It's really well done. It's kind of funny, kind of sweet, very entertaining. So I highly recommend that.
And Rob is still just as easy on the eyes as he was 30 years ago.
He is.
So just for that, tune in.
He absolutely is.
He's super cute.
They do go to look for the what they call the wood ape in one episode. Yeah. And they actually do cross the Boggy Creek at one point, which is interesting. So
that is interesting. Yes. Yeah, I liked it. I liked
that
it a
is
lot.
Interesting. So.
Is that all you have for Ichabod's Nose?
That's all I've got for Ichabod's Nose right now.
Okay, I have a few.
Okay.
Ghosts of War on Netflix. Super good.
Oh, that's good.
Super
one.
Awesome twist. Mm-hmm. I Am Not Okay With This, who has the girl from It in it, who I love. I love her. I love her. Mm-hmm. That is really good. And especially, so throughout, you see flashes of her running down a street at night, and she's all bloody. And you find out in the last episode mm-hmm. why. And see, I am getting a little morbid doing this stuff because I burst out laughing when the thing happened to make her that way. And it was, yeah, it's well worth the watch. You got to watch it clear to the last episode, though, because it's so good. And then let me know if you burst out laughing like okay. I did. And then the Lie on Amazon, super good as well.
Okay.
I told you about that one. Have you watched it yet?
I have not.
You need to. It's really good.
I have not. I have not had a lot of TV time lately.
Oh, well, I will help. I can help in that area. I'll just fill in the gaps where you are lacking, clearly.
Clearly, I'm you're way too productive. I'm counting on you guys for recommendations. No, I'm just, COVID's keeping me out of the house a bit because of work.
You need a cape. You need a COVID cape. I need to make you one. If I was crafty, I would. The thought's there, though.
I need a plague mask. That's what I need.
You do. We could get you one of those big, long-nosed masks.
Yeah.
Then you'd be able to keep your helpful. Distance for sure. Those had to have been like
for
3 feet long at least. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't know how they even got close enough to examine patients. I guess they couldn't, and that was the point of the mask. Once this hits the patient, that's as close as you could get, right?
Was that the point of it? I don't know.
I don't know either. Oh, there you go. Next week's Google and Beyond. We need to figure that out.
Oh, there we go. Yep. Next week's Google and Beyond. There we go. Okay. So, I do have a story about this about just us and watching morbid things that I needed to pass along to you because now it's infiltrating my work life. Okay. So you know that I am a teacher and I was helping one of my mm-hmm. students with a math problem and he had to write this algebraic expression in a different way. And so I was trying to get him to understand that if you take the number 10x and you split it apart into like 8x and 2x, it's still going to add up to 10x, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, he was having a very difficult time with this concept. And I talked about a pie. I talked about pieces of a square. I talked about several different things before. I just need to preface it before I got to this moment.
Oh, to like represent X.
to like represent X. Right. So I said, kid, you know, instead of saying his name, I'll say, kid, you are still you. And if I ripped off both your arms, you'd still be you. Your just arms would be over here. And then we could put them back on and it'd all add up to be the same. And he just looked at me, but he understood.
Teaching 101.
He understood. He got it. And I, as they were, words were coming out of my mouth, I thought, this is not the way he should learn this.
He went home and told his mom. That
yeah,
his teacher,
you were like, I'm going to get an email for this.
I know. I haven't yet, but who knows? There's still Christmas vacation. But he understood after that. So I just want to say it was an effective tool. Appropriate? Maybe not. Effective? I think so.
Well.
I'm just saying. So that. Dang. And I also have to tell you, too, I found out there is a benefit to having going through perimenopause. You want to know what it is? I know you're dying to know. You're not looking like you're dying to know. I need a little more Ernst in your face. I found out a benefit to going through perimenopause.
For going through perimenopause. Oh,
yes.
Okay. So lay it on me.
Chris asked me if I wanted to go on a run with him. And I said, no, because I'm out of Depends. I can't do it. So sorry. You gotta go on a run by yourself. See? Silver lining in all awful situations.
So the definition of perimenopause is the age at which you no longer have to fake a pulled hamstring to get out of running. You can just forget deliberately to buy Depends and say, I can't go. I'm out of Depends.
Right. Okay. I can't go because I will. Yeah.
There you go.
It'll all void right there.
So how's that going for you? Sitting for next to your mom there, Ian.
Oh, it's insightful.
It's great. I'm loving it. We're having such a good time. Okay. Now we can get on to the stuff. Do you have anything? Do you have any insight you want to share with your nephew here?
I don't.
Thank you. It's good. We can
move along.
Yeah.
We'll move along. Okay.
You're kind of chicken, but whatever.
So in our last episode, we left Darren at what he came to call Camp Ouija. As you may remember, while using the Ouija board at his in-law's house, he amused himself by tormenting the family dog, who became possessed by Zozo. And after that happened, the dog kind of got vicious and attacked its owner and was tossed outside. And the end result of that was the dog had his throat ripped out by wild animals.
And you may also recall that as Darren buried the dog, he couldn't help but feel he was somehow responsible for the animal's death. Very insightful of Darren.
Yeah. Good job, Darren.
And his mother-in-law agreed with his assessment and kicked the board out of the house. Darren was told if he ever brought it back, he would be kicked out too. So he hiked through the woods and discovered the abandoned camp. He placed the board in the trunk of an old car and headed home.
After the Sadie incident, Jamie and her parents withdrew from Darren, and he, in turn, withdrew from them. Eventually, he took off to spend some alone time with the board at Camp Ouija. He packed some sandwiches and trekked back through the woods, telling no one where he'd gone.
He reached the camp after about an hour of hiking and sat down for a moment to gather his thoughts. As he sat there, he was disturbed by a rustling sound coming from the old car where he'd left the board.
He approached the car, and as he got closer, the sound got louder. He opened the trunk, and dozens of rats scurried out, some of them jumping on him in their haste to flee. They had been living in the trunk of the car and had completely eaten the Ouija board. He slammed the trunk and tossed an old rusty tire rim on top of it to hold it closed.
He didn't retrieve the remains of his board that day, but he continued to use any board he could get his hands on, spending years in pursuit of the power the board promised. Zozo told him he was Darren's guardian angel. He was King of Kings, Lord of Lords.
Well, Jamie divorced Darren in 1992. He developed severe anxiety and suffered panic attacks, having a full-fledged nervous breakdown in 1993. After that, he made his way to his mom's house and asked for help.
During his stay with his mom, he slept most of the time. And as he slept, his mother would lay hands on him, praying for any darkness that lived inside of him to leave. And later, when he woke, she told him she'd seen dark shadows floating above him as she prayed.
Darren vowed to stay away from the board for good, but as time passed, the temptation proved to be too much, and he returned to his old habit.
1999 found Darren living in Michigan with his girlfriend, Liza. One evening, determined to prove to her that spirits were real and they could be contacted, he constructed a board, and the couple sat down to play.
The spirit they heard from said it was from cyberspace and was currently inhabiting a skull necklace. It just so happened that Liza's teenage son wore a skull necklace.
So Liza's interest was piqued. She was fascinated with what was happening on the board, becoming extra curious when the planchette began to spell out Zozo over and over again.
Darren stopped the session then, but it was too late. Liza was all in. They'd made contact with the beyond, and she wanted more. So the next day, she brought her own Ouija board, and shortly after that, Darren found her playing on the board with her nieces.
The young girls didn't view chatting with Zozo as a problem. They found him to be super funny and were having a great time with him.
So Darren, always tempted by the board, decided to join them. He showed them how the board could spell out words he'd written on papers and hidden from others. Next, he pulled out an encyclopedia and asked the board what page he was on, taking pains that no one else could see. The board spelled out King Arthur, which was correct.
But then, as was often the case, the board got nasty, spelling out Kill Darren and reporting it was watching them through a mirror. At that moment, Darren looked at the mirror and noticed the skull necklace belonging to Liza's son hanging beside it, with the eyes staring into its surface. Darren reports the eyes were glowing red. Okay, so now we need to go ahead and legit or bullshit this thing. What is that face for? That's a face.
I just think, I believe in the power of the Ouija board, and it's something that shouldn't be messed with. So I think shame on Darren for messing with it, especially with young kids around. But I also think he's kind of full of it. I don't believe the skull necklace eyes were glowing red.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely believe in the power of the Ouija board, and I think that, you know, we've all heard enough stories to give merit to it, but he just seems like such a douche. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because he was so mean to that dog.
I know.
And I just don't like him, and I don't want him to have any credit at all. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm too biased.
Maybe. I think I'm right there with you. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah. I don't think the eyes were red or anything like that. But, I mean, maybe it was just like a shock and awe kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just showing, like, I don't know if maybe that did happen, but
yeah, I don't know. That it could have spelled that out.
I guess, like, what I'm trying to get at is, like, maybe he was doing it for, I don't know, a show or something.
Right, to get the girl.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, so here's something I'll say. We're gonna talk about later in this episode. Darren was in an episode of Ghost Adventures, and particularly with regard to Zozo, which seems to be the entity that comes through a lot of times when people are using the Ouija board. And they were using this planchette that had kind of raised long legs at one point during the episode. And when you use the planchette on a Ouija board, you're supposed to just rest your fingers on it. Well, I had Chris watch it with me because I watched it once, and I was, you have to watch it to appreciate it. They use a lot of flash photography or you know, flash editing to insert scary, terrifying pictures and music or whatever to manipulate the viewer. Okay, fine, whatever. Kudos. It's for entertainment, right? But at one point, they're using this, and one of the legs falls off the planchette. So I'm thinking to myself, if a spirit's supposed to be sliding this across the board with no pressure from the top, how the hell does a leg fall off of the planchette, right? So, I mean, I'm in my head.
Well, and Ghost Adventures doesn't, for me, watching Ghost Adventures, that seems to be purely entertainment.
Yes.
And not any reality.
Yeah, exactly. It's TV. It's over the top drama and hair product. That's all I can think is, you know. So.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Anyway.
All right. All right. Moving on.
Moving on. Well, did we say first if we think, do we, I guess we all kind of think it's the Ouija board's legit, but maybe Darren's bullshit.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Is that what kind of our consensus?
Yeah, like exaggerated at least.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
In 2002, Darren moved back to Oklahoma with a new girlfriend named Vera. Darren and Vera had a daughter together and named her Kristen. As you probably already have guessed, Darren began to use the board once again. He often used it with a friend of his by the name of Jay.
Jay and Darren played music together and one day asked the board what they should name their band. The board said Iron Tongue. Vera laughed and said she didn't like that name and told the board to come up with a better one. In response, the board repeatedly spelled out Zozo before spelling out your daughter will have Iron Tongue.
That was sort of a mood killer. So Jay headed home and Darren destroyed the board. Later the same day, Darren awoke from a nap and headed to the bathroom. There he discovered his 2-year-old daughter on her back in the bathtub with the water running, trying to keep her head above water.
Aww.
Somehow, she had climbed from her crib during nap time and managed to get into the tub and turn on the water. Darren and Vera pulled her out and comforted her. Other than coughing up a little water, she seemed fine at first.
The next day, they got a call from daycare. Kristen had a very high fever. She was seen and evaluated in the emergency room and was actually admitted to the ICU with a severe infection, later deemed to be MRSA. Her face swelled up, and alarmingly, so did her tongue. In fact, her tongue swelled to such an extent that it protruded from her mouth. Thankfully, the little girl responded to antibiotics and made a full recovery.
Still, after leaving the hospital, the family heard voices in the house, vague voices that mumbled and were impossible to understand. But it was the discovery of a copperhead snake slithering along the kitchen floor, which finally persuaded Darren to contact a minister who performed a blessing on the house.
Mm-hmm. Well, legit or bullshit?
I will say, now I know this is another piece of fiction, but so there's an episode of House where it's like the whole thing's a big hallucination, but in it, the patient that he's dealing with gets a huge swollen tongue and like puffs out one of his eyes, like one of his eyes pops out of his socket because his tongue is so swollen.
Oof.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. But, and I don't know if that was MRSA or not, but I know that your tongue can swell like that. You know what I mean? So
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that medical condition can actually probably happen, I would assume.
Agreed. I think medically what the little girl went through probably happened. I think it's terrifying that she could get out of her crib, get into the bathtub and turn the water on by herself.
But maybe it wasn't by herself. Huh? Maybe it was Zozo there with her the whole time.
That could be.
Could be. It could happen.
That could be.
I think it could have happened. I mean, because if the demon wants to get you, they go through your kids.
Well,
for
that's
sure.
True. They would. Yeah, definitely.
Children are vulnerable.
What about the voices they were hearing in the house? The vague voices that, you know, in the house in Ashland, Andy, when I would go downstairs from, you know where the basement door was, but kind of just off the kitchen there. Mm-hmm. I could hear vague mumbling voices anytime I went downstairs, and as soon as I got all the way down, they were gone. They weren't there anymore. And that
house was spooky.
That happened constantly, and to the point where I just kind of tuned it out, didn't think anything of it.
Yes, there was something in that house for sure.
So I think
that house was super spooky.
So I think that the murmuring voices, I'll say, are legit. I guess I say legit for this whole occurrence.
I do too. I think legit for the whole thing.
Yeah, it all seems to add up.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a legitimate Ouija board experience.
Okay. Agreed.
Because it doesn't seem like it's over the top. And I would say, you know, some people could say, well, a toddler falling into a bathtub could be over the top, but it wasn't like it was the glowing red eyes or something.
No, but here's another
some dragon coming out of the wall.
Here's another possibility that no one would even want to think of. What if her parents started the tub and forgot about it and walked out of the room while she was in it and then returned and went, oh my God, you know?
Well, that is also a possibility.
I would hope you wouldn't be that busy and that preoccupied, but I suppose that could happen.
I'm exploring all possibilities. No one even wants to think about that being a possibility, but you know.
Maybe Vera was perimenopausal and forgot things a lot.
I mean, and that could be the case, but that still wouldn't explain her tongue.
What do you get MRSA from? I mean, would she have gotten it from water?
My guess is,
I guess I don't understand.
My guess is there was water in her lungs and she got an infection in her. That would because if she was septic, that would be infection in the bloodstream. Okay. So my guess is, I don't know if one of them was a carrier of MRSA or if, you know, where exactly she got it. But if it happened while she was in the tub and she coughed up water when they got her out, my guess is that she aspirated. So she inhaled that water into her lungs. And that's where she got the infection would be my guess. But again, I don't know anything more than what I read in the book. So I have no, you know, other than an opinion or a guess, I have no idea.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Well, in 2009, Darren and his latest girlfriend, who he doesn't name in this chapter, he had a lot of girlfriends, moved the family to Oklahoma City, where they moved into a house, which, as it turns out, was vacated quite suddenly by the previous tenants. It was vacated so quickly, in fact, that many of their possessions had been left behind.
But as is the case in all stories like this, the price was a steal, so they took it. Darren and his girlfriend chose the basement as the place to have their bedroom, which they shared with their 2-year-old daughter, Allison.
Other members of the household included 2 of Darren's sons, Justin and Jacob, and Jacob's girlfriend, Carly, and then along with Darren's uncle. And one weekend, Darren's girlfriend went to Texas to visit with family, leaving Allison with Darren.
Darren laid little Allison in her crib and settled on his bed to read while she napped. As he sat and read, the lamp flickered out, leaving the basement in complete darkness. He got up and carefully moved through the dark in the direction of the wall switch, hands extended in front of him, inching his feet along the floor. He tripped over a microphone stand which had not been there before.
His anxiety ramped up a bit, so he decided not to stand again, instead crawling along the floor. He found the wall switch, but it didn't work, so he again crawled along the floor toward the bathroom and tried that switch. It didn't work.
As if crawling around in the dark basement wasn't frightening enough, shuffling sounds started up from the unpacked moving boxes under the stairs. Really nervous now, Darren made his way back to the stairs and climbed to the top to open the door in an effort to get some light into the basement.
But the door was locked, so he walked back down the stairs and rummaged around in one of his drawers for a lighter. He flicked it and discovered that baby Allison's crib had been moved from its position against the wall and was now in the center of the room, and Allison wasn't in it.
This is getting scary. He raced to the small alcove under the stairs, the area with the moving boxes, to look for Allison. As he approached, he heard her giggle and say, "Peekaboo!" That's when he screamed.
And before you get too judgy, let's all keep in mind that any little kid, no matter how adorable, saying peekaboo in the middle of a dark basement is terrifying and will cause you to scream, probably. It would mean.
I do.
So Darren screamed, and from above, he heard the pounding of his son's footsteps. His son opened the door at the top of the stairs without any difficulty, and Darren and little Allison were saved for a time.
Darren reports that on another occasion, as he stood at the top of the main staircase in the house, chatting with one of his sons, Allison played on the floor below. But as Darren and his son chatted, Allison began to scream, and Darren raced down the stairs. As he did, Allison, lifted by some unseen force, floated through the air toward the basement steps and disappeared. Darren fumbled around in the small alcove beneath the stairs to find his little girl. He was becoming more and more concerned about the happenings in the house.
For example, Jacob and Carly played with the board, and during the session, Carly went blind. The episode lasted about 10 minutes, not ending until after Zozo told them they were all cursed.
After that, Carly and Jacob decided that they had had enough of the house and moved out, only to get into a head-on collision. Carly broke her pelvis, both legs, and one arm, and Jacob suffered head trauma.
So, a couple of things. In the show, they bring up this blindness thing where the Carly went blind. He refers to her as Kaylee in the show and calls her Carly in the book. I don't know. And in the show, he says, when they say, how long was she blind? He goes, about an hour. And in the book, he says 10 minutes. So, you know, Darren is, it's things like that, those little discrepancies or whatever that make me kind of scratch my head.
Right.
And we'll get more again into the show, the episode of Ghost Adventures in a bit. But I don't think the toddler levitated. I do not believe that that happened. I don't believe an unseen force carried her downstairs. I'm calling bullshit on that.
What?
I am. I don't, I think that.
I had such a good picture in my head.
I think that when people who claim levitation by spirits and whatnot, I think that they can flick inanimate objects if there's enough anger or force, but I think that that's very rare and would have to be super concentrated. I do not think that a supernatural force could pick up a living creature. I don't, even if it's a demon.
You would think that she could have been possessed by Zozo and floated because of possession.
Okay, so I'm going to say I do not believe levitation in any circumstance is a legitimate phenomenon. I don't. I would be willing to reconsider that at some point, but at this point in my life, I absolutely do not believe that it has happened. I believe any time that it has been described or deemed something that is possible, that there's another explanation for that. Like she was standing on an end table and jumped and started to cry, you know.
Have you not ever seen that guy, that magician guy, that illusionist, Chris Angel. That's his name.
Yeah, but
doesn't he levitate?
No, it's an illusion.
Yeah, exactly. That's an
illusion. You guys are ruining everything.
That's an illusion.
For me.
You can still call it legit. And I'm not saying I'm right. It could be that you're right by saying legit.
She's not.
But I
am right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that, I don't know.
And I'll say this also. Even if levitation was a legit phenomenon, which I personally do not believe that it is, I don't know that Darren is someone I would trust if he said, hey, I saw someone levitate.
Now that I can concur with.
I'm just saying.
I get on board with.
He definitely likes.
He does. And he has not been, he's not a person who demonstrates good judgment at all. So
Well, and also, like you said, consistency. Yes. He's not consistent with his story. Like the black-eyed kids dude, the reporter from Abilene, totally consistent even 25 years later or 20 years later, whatever it was. But this guy, no. So I get that he doesn't lend himself to credibility
and
at all.
And I will say this, too. The reporter from Abilene for the black-eyed kids, if it had been somebody else, I would have given the black-eyed kids probably a 0 or a 1 on my Yeti scale, right? But because of his consistency and his, what do I want to say, unwavering belief in it, I have to accept that there could be some credence to it. I have to. But I can't really do that with Darren.
No, I get that.
So I don't know.
But levitation is real.
What are you... what are you guys' thoughts?
I agree. I don't think the baby levitated. I think that, like the other case, the car wreck probably was legit.
Now, see, I think the car wreck was legit, but I don't think the car wreck had anything to do with the Ouija board.
Well, yeah, of course it did. That was the whole thing.
No, it didn't. They were psyching themselves out. It had nothing to do with the Ouija board.
But
nothing. I don't think. What do you think?
I think I'd be more inclined to believe that forces could be manipulated to cause a car to wreck than someone could levitate. And I know I'm probably picking and choosing.
Yeah, exactly.
I am a lone wolf.
You are. Well, yeah, it's a little more fantastical.
No, but listen, their minds, they were so scared. They just left the house. That is the perfect recipe for a car wreck if there's ever going to be one.
They didn't leave the house right then.
They were in such a panic.
They moved. They took some time and
moved into another car
at a later date. So it wasn't, they didn't leave the house like right then.
Well,
because remember, she was supposedly blind.
Maybe they were jumpy and somebody ran a stop sign or something. I don't know.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you think she really went blind?
Huh? Say that again.
Do you think she went blind while doing the Ouija board?
No, that I do not believe. But I do believe the baby levitated.
I don't know. I bet she went blind.
You're just trying to be contrary to your mother.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Because they said in the show and the book, right, that he went or she
is the same
blind,
guy, though.
But yeah, but he said for 10 minutes and then an hour.
So the time is disputed.
It's not
whether
so
it
it's not disputed. It's the same guy, Darren, who wrote the book. And Darren was also in the show. So in the show, he says she was blind for about an hour. In the book, he says she was blind for 10 minutes. So I'm calling bullshit on the whole blindness thing, because it was there was never any place like she didn't go seek medical attention or anything like that. She just was like, my eyes, I can't see, I'm blind. Zozo has blinded me.
Well, maybe I didn't have all the context.
So I mean, she could be a Fruit Loop and just completely hysterical, and that's why she went blind or believed she was blind. Or maybe she stared at the sun too long or put her head accidentally in the microwave. But I don't think that any blindness that occurred in this woman was caused by Zozo. I'm calling bullshit on that. I'm calling half bullshit on the car wreck, and I'm calling total bullshit on the levitation. Those are my three scores for this segment. What about you guys?
I am calling bullshit on the car wreck. I am calling legit on levitation, just to be contrary. It's levitation's
fair enough. Thing.
And what was the third one? What's the third thing?
Blindness, car wreck.
What's the third one?
Levitation. Those are your
blindness. Blindness. I think bullshit on the blindness. I can't do the blind. I think that's bullshit. I think if you're going to go blind, you go blind.
Were there any like witnesses like saying that they could perceive her acting as if she were blind?
There's no mention of that. Plus, you only have whoever's messing with it. It was just Kaylee or Carly, whatever her name actually is, and her boyfriend who were playing with the Ouija board. And then Darren, when he was called up there.
See, I think on second consideration, the blindness is probably an exaggeration on Darren's part. So it's probably bullshit. And so is the levitation thing. But I think, if anything, the car has the most credence to being related.
All right.
Okay. So that's where we are.
Yep.
Okay.
That's where we
are. Darren, being ever the nomad, in 2008, he was living in Arkansas. At that time, he started a blog on his experiences with Zozo, as well as what he had discovered during research. He discovered that Zozo was an actual demon listed in a 19th century French book of demonology called the Dictionnaire Infernal. He also started hearing from others with their own stories of Zozo to share.
But before we get into all of that, let's backtrack to last week's episode. Remember, we said that Darren asked the board how he would die, and it said stabbed to death. Well, in 2013, Darren was married to a woman named Kathleen. They got into a pretty bad argument one evening, and Darren left to calm down. When he returned, Kathleen met him at the door and screamed, "You can just go die." And then she stabbed him once in the shoulder and once in the head.
Whoa. That was not expected. His son Jacob happened to be around and helped him to the car. Darren didn't want to call 911 due to concerns about getting Kathleen in trouble. So Jacob just drove him off toward the hospital. But the bleeding was so bad, they needed to pull over. They stopped at a convenience store and called 911. From thereafter, Darren collapsed inside on the floor. He refused to press charges against Kathleen and blames their use of the board for what happened.
I'm sorry, but your father just been stabbed in the head. And you're, well, you know, I'll just drive you there. If my husband stabbed me in the head, I would not be worried about him getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Yep.
I think that's a little silly on Darren's part.
Agreed.
Okay. So as we were saying, in 2008, Darren began a blog chronicling his experiences and documenting his research. This led to him being a guest on podcasts, as well as on the show Ghost Adventures in 2014, in which he and his wife participated in a spirit board session.
It was during this session, Kathleen left the house and on re-entering was accompanied by a smell of rotting meat and a claim that she was sexually assaulted.
Okay, so this is the episode I watched, and it was interesting. She also is, I had deduced after watching this episode that she was the girlfriend. You remember how I said he didn't name his girlfriend at this house in 2008 or whatever, or not 2008, whatever, with where the little girl levitated. Well, that was the house he was living in with Kathleen, because this is the house where the girl went blind. And Kathleen is the one who stabbed Darren in 2013. Well, in 2014, she's here at the house again with him for this episode. She didn't want to go into the house at all at the beginning, but she did. So Darren and one of the cast members sat on the floor, and she sat kind of over on this mattress in the room and watched them, and they summoned Zozo. She got really upset when the planchette began to volley back and forth between Z and O. So she got up and she left. She was also coughing quite a bit. And so she just got up and walked out. When she returned, she seemed disoriented, and she was barefoot now, and her belt was undone. And she honestly looked like one of those drunk chicks at a party who squats to pee in the woods and then forgets to do her pants back up, because she was kind of stumbly, staggery like that.
Yep.
So everyone sort of asked her what was wrong, and she said Zozo was very sexual. And so what happens is she gets up, she walks out, then they're up in the room. You see the camera in the room, and they're like, wait, what's that noise? And somebody yells out the door, who is it? And she goes, it's Kathleen. And one of the guys goes, cause you know, the Ghost Adventures guys, one goes, that doesn't even sound like her. So, of course, she's possessed, right? Because, yeah, you know, she was outside for 10 minutes, either, you know, taking a pee. We just don't know. But so anyway,
we don't know. I said, we don't know.
So she comes back in, and they ask her what's wrong. And she's like, Zozo was very sexual, but she's barefoot. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, God, what's that smell? Because it had followed her up into the room. But she's there. She's obviously, she's distraught. She sits back down, and Darren looks at her and goes, Kath, we can't have disruptions like this. As she comes back in, her pants are undone, her shoes are gone. Okay. Awesome. No one checked on her. No one asked her if she was okay. She's the lone female in this, you know, crew of guys who are clearly more concerned about TV ratings or whatever. Anyway, they all talk about the smell of rotting meat or whatever. So they continue to use the Ouija board. And then after a while, she just starts to, because it starts to do Z-O-Z-O-Z-O. She gets really upset and she just leaves. And after a while, they realize, well, not only did she just go outside, she's just gone. She left. So everybody finally decides, hey, maybe we ought to try and find her, see if she's okay. So they drive around looking for her, and she doesn't have her cell phone on her. Finally, she gets a call from Darren, and she's safe and sound back at the hotel. Not too long after that, in the book, Darren mentions that their marriage ended a few months after the airing of Ghost Adventures. So there you go. The tragic love story of Darren and Kathleen.
Yeah. My gosh. Yeah. He just doesn't sound right in the head. So we need to legit or bullshit this one. I would say on her part, it sounds legit, but on the Ghost Adventures TV, let's get some ratings, it sounds bullshitty on that part. But the fact that they weren't giving her any attention or pursued that part of the story, I guess kind of lends credence to her that it kind of, maybe that happened. What do you think?
I'm thinking. My bullshit meter, the needle on my bullshit meter is way over, kind of in the red zone right now, almost on overdrive. I don't know that I think that demons are capable of sexual assault. I know that that is something that is widely believed, and I have not done enough research on demonology or whatever, nor do I ever have any desire to explore that or to be able to offer an opinion on that. That would be valuable, or something that I can't offer a legitimate opinion on it. I don't know if it's because I want to think it's bullshit or because I really think it's bullshit. I got to say bullshit. That's what I got to say.
Okay. Ian?
Yeah, I think it's bullshit. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. The whole thing is very weird. I don't know how to, like, I'm trying to digest it, you know?
Do you think there are such thing as succubuses? Succubi?
Succubuses? See, well, and see, that kind of, like, touches back what you said earlier. Like, is it a demon causing a person to, like, are they being attacked, or is it like a possession kind of thing?
No,
or
yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
So, was she possessed and she did that to herself?
They imply in the episode that she's possessed by Zozo when she comes in. She portrays herself as having been assaulted by Zozo. Well, which is it? Is it one or the other, or is it both? You know what I mean? We're expected to accept that something happened to her and that Zozo is responsible for it. We're also, I think, expected to believe that, number one, she was possessed by Zozo, and number two, she was sexually assaulted by Zozo. So which is it? Because if Zozo possesses her and then sexually assaults her, isn't Zozo just, in effect, masturbating? I mean, isn't that...
Well, yes. I mean, yeah, but like in a physical form, right?
But if it's to feel that pleasure.
Because if it's a spirit, I mean, yeah. Like,
so, yeah. I mean, make up your mind, people, because it seems that we were expected to believe two different things there. The other thing I'll say is I do believe possession is real. I do not believe possession is something which happens instantaneously. And we're kind of expected to believe that about this dog, that Zozo's it inhabiting it. And we're expected to believe that Zozo just jumps in and out of people. Well, I don't think that that's how possession starts. I think possession is much more subtle, and it's a process. It's not a either you're possessed or you aren't. I think it's a process where that kind of thing happens. But again, not at all an expert, not even a novice at this stuff. I know zero, but I just would find it really hard to believe, impossible, in fact, to believe that possession would be instantaneous.
Interesting.
So,
okay. We need to do an episode on possession sometime.
Just like on a quick aside.
Yeah.
Have you watched the movie The Taking of Deborah Logan?
No.
It's an excellent, like, possession movie.
Really?
And it's like, but it's like what she's describing is like subtle and gradual, and like it builds up to like a point where then it's like, okay, yes, she is possessed, but it takes a while to get to that point. That's and it starts with, you know, small things like odd behavior. And
well, isn't that kind of what happened to the boy in The Conjuring too? Mm-hmm. It was gradual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Deborah Logan, I think that's an independent film. It's really well done.
Yeah, no, it's a phenomenal movie. It's really like sets a tone well.
That's a very, very good movie. Agreed.
Very good. Okay. So I think what we're all saying here is that it's totally safe to play with the Ouija board.
Get yours today. Saying? We'll put a link on the website where you can, you know, get in touch with Parker Brothers or whoever the hell has it now. Actually, no, we won't. If you want to do that, you're on your own. We will not be responsible for the condemnation of your souls.
Numerous encounters have been reported to Darren over the years, and I encourage you to buy the book and read up on these. If you are interested in the Ghost Adventures episode, it can be found in season 12, episode 3. Let's talk about the three levels of Zozo encounters. Darren categorizes encounters with the entity into three levels that basically define the escalations of its ability to disturb, disrupt, and destroy.
So level one is when someone experiences movement of the planchette, whether gradual or even sudden, back and forth from Z to O. Darren calls this the rainbow effect due to the shape the planchette traverses when moving between the two letters. Another characteristic of this level is the planchette moving in tight spirals and circles. Zozo may refer to itself as Zaza or even Mama here as well during this level of encounter.
Deception can also occur here, as a user may be led to believe he or she is communicating with a deceased friend or family member. Zozo may seem pleasant or even funny during an encounter. This level can last a while, but if the user continues with the board, level two is not far away.
A level 2 encounter involves recognition of the demon. It will also reveal how much it knows about the user, demonstrating knowledge of things like one's middle name, date of birth, or nickname. It may still pretend on occasion to be a deceased friend or relative. The planchette is more certain in its movements. It will move quickly and decisively and will use abbreviations when spelling things out. It may also start to voice threats or become mocking or insulting. Here is an excerpt from the book involving Zaza and Mama, sent to Darren from a reader of his blog.
For around a year now, I have been very interested in this Zozo phenomenon. I had wanted to use a Ouija board for a while, but never got around to it. When one of my buddies did it, I was excited to hear how it went. He described it as a horrible experience. When he told me he got a spirit named Zaza, I got very excited. The story he told me matched others' experiences very closely. He had never heard of Zaza until he looked it up after his Ouija session. It kept telling him and the other users to kill each other. It would answer impossible math questions, answer personal questions, and even tell them who was going to call. And sure enough, that person would call minutes later. It apparently would focus on one user especially, and would constantly tell him to die. I decided to attend the next time they used the Ouija board. First time, nothing very significant happened, except it kept going to NZ. The next night, however, it would move very fast between Z and A, and also M and A. It would also constantly move in circular motions. I brought a digital camera and would ask it to show itself on the camera. I didn't notice anything in most pictures, but in one, I can see a smoky-looking skull with eye sockets, a nose, and two long fangs right next to the board in the glass.
Other aspects of level 2 include objects moving on their own, candles being blown out, flickering lights, doors opening and closing on their own, or being locked and unlocked. The planchette may fly off the board on its own during a session.
This is a dangerous level, as spirit attachment can occur here. Board users may become obsessive during this level, desiring to use the board all the time.
Level 3 encounters are not as common as the first two levels. Most people who encounter level 2 attachments realize what's going on and sever communication with the board. But some people get to the obsession part and just keep going. Level 3 puts people at risk for deeper obsession and also possession. They may experience dark thoughts that are not their own. These thoughts may encourage them to hurt others or even themselves. They may consider suicide or other methods of self-harm.
So who or what is Zozo? Let's talk about some theories. Number 1, encounters with Zozo demonstrate nothing more than the ideomotor effect. This was introduced in 1852 by Benjamin Carpenter, who was a British physiologist. The concept of ideomotor effect is used a lot by paranormal debunkers with regard to all sorts of things such as dowsing, automatic writing, pendulum use, and, you guessed it, the Ouija board.
Basically, in this situation, the muscles are guided by the subconscious. So if you want to hear from your dead grandpa, putting your fingers lightly on the planchette and thinking of him could theoretically get a response from your own mind, granting what you want to hear through the route your subconscious takes from your brain to your fingers and in turn the board.
However, this doesn't explain why the planchette moves so quickly at times or even flies off the board. It also does not explain how the board seems to know things board users don't, as is the case of the encyclopedia page or secret words written on papers.
Here is an account from a physician. I am 30 years old. I am a doctor. I never really believed in the Ouija. I was a skeptic, being a man of science. Recently, my little sister, 22, brought one over to use for a night of scary fun. The first time the planchette moved, an individual who recently killed themselves contacted us. It turned out to be a friend of someone in the room who was not touching the planchette to give her a message. After that, we were all a bit spooked. The two who were touching the planchette had no idea who this was or that they ever even existed, for that matter. Only one person in the room did. Now after that, Zaza, over and over again, spelled out S-E-X, then gibberish. We put the board away. Last night, one more time we tried, the planchette spelled out Mama,
at an alarmingly fast pace, as if the planchette was being pushed by myself and another. Upon asking questions of what that means and is it a name, the planchette continued on in a figure eight all around the board, even at one point counting down the alphabet backwards from Z to A. When we took our hands off of the planchette, it continued to move for another second on its own. I just did some research online and came across your, Darren's, website. I have never heard of Zaza or Mama until now, and I'm a bit confused. I am realizing this may be an evil entity trying to harm us. Is this true? Please tell me what to do.
Number two, another theory is Super Psi and is something which used to be known as Super ESP. This theory states that non-local consciousness has the ability to access information anywhere, including the collective. Basically, this means that someone with this ability can tap into the thoughts of others and regurgitate information.
Thought forms and tulpas. A tulpa is something that, am I pronouncing that right? Mm-hmm. Tulpa?
Yep.
Okay. Thought forms and tulpas. A tulpa is something that is created by the thoughts of the collective. The men in black have been talked about as a tulpa, something that enough people if enough people believe in and think about and therefore becomes real. Slender Man is an example of this. Some cryptids could fall into this category, possibly, such as Bigfoot, the Snarly Yow, the Banshee. If enough people think about it and focus their energy on it, it can become real. This theory begs the question, was Zozo created unintentionally by Ouija board users?
So let's look a little deeper at thought forms in magic. Thought forms are just what they sound like. Imagine if a thought had a force. Thinking a bad thought at someone, for example, could cause that bad thought or energy to latch onto some part of their energy and cause an effect. Thinking a good thought can also be directed at an individual and cause an effect. If we imagine a thought form as a creative force, a tulpa or magical being can be created. Confused? Us too. Here's a little explanation from the book.
Alexandra David Neal, who lived from 1868 to 1969, was an unusual French woman who created a thought form that turned on her. Alexandra had no interest in settling for the life of a homemaker. She wanted to explore far reaches of the world, especially Asia. She was the first woman to enter Lhasa, the forbidden capital of Tibet.
David Neal learned a great deal of Tibetan magic, including how to create a thought form called a tulpa. Of temporary duration, tulpas usually assume human shape and are created to be sent out on a mission. David Neal sought to create a llama who would be short and fat, of an innocent and jolly type, as she described it in her autobiography, Magic and Mystery in Tibet. After several months of performing the prescribed ritual, a phantom monk manifested. It assumed a lifelike form over a period of time and existed almost like a guest in David Neal's apartment. The tulpa tagged along with her as she went out on a tour.
Then, to her distress, the tulpa began to change, she wrote. The features gradually underwent a change. The fat, chubby-cheeked fellow grew leaner. His face assumed a vaguely mocking, sly, malignant look. He became more troublesome and bold. In brief, he escaped my control. The tulpa began touching her and rubbing up against her in a sexual way. Others began to see him, but he did not respond to anyone's conversation, only to David Neal.
David Neal decided to dissolve the tulpa in accordance with Tibetan rituals, but the phantom resisted her efforts. It took her 6 months to eliminate him. The entire episode upset her, and she termed it very bad luck.
Very bad luck. She did that all herself. That was no luck. There was no luck involved in
exactly.
That. Now, scientific experiments, believe it or not, have been done to create thought forms or tulpas. A guy named A.R.G. Owen and his wife Iris conducted experiments in the 1970s to create a thought form named Philip. Well, why not? You know, just name him Philip. This was to be a discarnate human personality with an artificial life history and background story. To create it, they used meditation, visualization, and communication via seances. The first several months yielded nothing. However, eventually, Philip took form and responded to questions with table tilting and table tapping. Philip, although present, was quite weak, and along with the tapping and tilting, only managed some vague EVP responses. They were able to get responses for several years, but the responses required the energy of not just Owen and Iris, but of other parapsychologists whose help they enlisted. Even then, they never got the results David Neal got.
However, It can't be denied that parallels between David Neil's Little Monk and Zozo exist. Zozo takes on a life of its own. Others believe it to be real. Behavior begins as pleasant and changes to unpleasant. It is attracted to people who resonate with its own energy, fear, anxiety, etc.
So the next theory is gods and spirits. It has been suggested that perhaps Zozo was an ancient spirit or god who became classified as a demon. A demon is a fallen angel destined to cause trouble for mankind. So could Zozo be nothing more than a fallen angel turned demon?
Darren refers to the myth of Zu. This is Sumerian legend about a monstrous bird who lives in the mountains and eats oxen. The flapping of its wings can cause sandstorms or whirlwinds. There is a tale regarding Zu in which he plans to steal something called the Tablet of Destinies from a god, Enlil. Why? Because possessing the tablet gives one great powers. So while Enlil is bathing one day, Zu steals the tablet and is hunted down and slain by Ninurta, Enlil's son. Could it be that Zu is Zozo?
Or could Zozo be a... Is it just jinn?
It's just jinn.
Are you sure?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, jinn. In Arabic, jinn means hidden ones. These beings are shapeshifters, believed to be present all over Earth and not limited to one religion or culture. They often hate humans and are capable of any behavior a demon is capable of. Hauntings, possession, attacks, or even nightmares.
They lie and like violence. They can attach to people and torment them for years. One account mentioned in the Zozo phenomenon relays how Zozo refers to himself in one encounter as Hin, which is a term for a low-level djinn.
Low-level djinn. Is that like a henchman in a gang?
Yep.
Is that what that would be? Yep. The henchmen over there arbitrarily turning knobs. Is that what that would be?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Number five. Is Zozo a collective? Could he not be a single entity, but instead a collection of multiple entities referring to themselves as Zozo, as if you or I might call ourselves human if we were talking to something from another plane? It might be that a name doesn't matter. I wouldn't be Handy. You wouldn't be Jen. I would be human, and so would you. And that would be how our Ouija board victims would refer to us. Ooh. Let's have some Ouija board victims. Let's do it. I'm all in.
Oh, God.
I'm all in. We're legit and bullshitting this now. I'm all in.
Do you have a theory that...
And I'm only all in because of our special guests we're going to have to... Because of our special guests that we're going to have at the end, that we're going to tag on to the end of this episode, right?
Yeah.
We're tagging them on to the end of this one? Or we're doing it as a special
bonus episode, because this is going to be a long episode. So I'm all in.
Yeah, we're going to do it as a bonus episode.
I'm all in, too. I think it's legit. Mm-hmm. Ian, are you all... What are your thoughts about the Ouija board?
I think the Ouija board is legit. Whether this Zozo is or not is a different thing. I don't think what Darren referred to as it being zoo, I don't think it has any relation to that. And I don't know why an Arabic demon would be in following an American around.
Because they hate us.
I don't think that's the case either. I really do think that, you know, the Tulpa thing, like that, I think that could possibly have the most credence in my personal opinion. I think that it could be something that, you know, because they all use the Ouija board and you experience something, you know what I mean? And so if you want to think of it as Zozo just being a label for their experiences, you know, I could buy into that.
You think Zozo's a tulpa? Okay.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah, I think. And I don't think it's the, you know, the ideomotor theory and their subconscious, you know, like the self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing. Like, I don't think that they're trying to do it to themselves just because they want it so bad. You know what I mean? I don't really buy that either. I think, if anything, it's a tulpa.
I
I think it's a fallen angel. It's a demon.
I think Ideomotor has its place. And I think that it can certainly affect certain users of the Ouija board or of pendulums and things like that, where you're concentrating on something, you're supposed to be holding your hand still or whatever. But I do think that subconsciously people can move the planchette. But I also think that a thought form or a tulpa is a very real possibility with regard to the Ouija board, or particularly with, not necessarily just the Ouija board, but with regard to Zozo. Because if you're contacting, or if you're tapping into that stream of consciousness, or if you imagine that stream of consciousness being something like a radio station where people are thinking Zozo, 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 or whatever, if they tap into that, then I think that they could, right, you know, tune it into their board somehow. And I'm probably not explaining that properly, but that's kind of how I view it in my head. Do I think, though, Andy, that demons are something that are actual and possible? Absolutely, yes. But I don't think that Zozo is a single demon that's tapping into every Ouija board around the world at the same time that they're being used or whatever. I think Zozo's a tulpa.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like what you're saying, it made me think of an analogy to, like, you know, the Bloody Mary phenomena, and like looking in the mirror and like trying to get her to show up, right? Or I don't know. It's kind of similar to that, because then you just start like wanting to manifest that single entity. You know what I mean? It's not like you're going to use the Ouija board and then it's like, okay, well, whatever's here, show yourself. It's like they're trying to get Zozo to come or something like that.
So, Andy, you've said you've used the Ouija board before, right?
Yes, I would go over to Trisha Meshack's house, and she also had HBO, and that's where we watched rated R movies. Then we'd, we'd use the Ouija board. We didn't really know what we were doing. You know, we were in elementary school, for crying out loud. I don't even remember if we talked to anybody. I know the planchette would move, but I think that she was probably secretly moving it. That, or we had a demon with us.
Did you close it down properly?
Oh, no. But I don't even know if we opened it properly. I don't even remember what we did, really.
Did you ever feel like anything, you never felt like anything was attached to you, or you never felt scared or anything after you did it?
I probably brought it home with me. That's probably why our house in Ashland felt so weird all the time.
Do you ever still feel like you are experiencing spiritual stuff? Do you ever still feel like there's something around you?
No. I think whatever I was experiencing went on to Alex.
Oh, yeah.
In the house in Wayne. Poor child.
Yeah.
But he doesn't experience anything. So no, the only weird thing I experienced here was with the light switch that I believe was Dad communicating with me, which was super weird.
I experience noises sometimes.
You've had sleep paralysis where you saw shadow people too.
Yes. I've had two distinct cases of sleep paralysis where I've seen one shadow person, and then I've seen, the best way to describe it is like a zombie hand coming up from the bed and reaching onto me as I'm laying down.
Was this before or after you partook of something? Just kidding.
Well, after. Probably.
I'm just teasing.
Actually, it's probably because of lack thereof.
Could have been. Yeah, that's scary. I've never had sleep paralysis. That'd be really scary.
It's horrible. Yeah. It's a horrible, horrible feeling.
You have? What have you experienced?
Well, so, I mean, before I knew what it was, it happened a few times in my 20s while I was pregnant with Nathan. And basically you wake up and you are awake. But so when you sleep, your brain paralyzes your body, and that is a normal thing. Otherwise you would act out all of your dreams, right? So, So in sleep paralysis, your mind wakes up, but that your body has not been restored to being able to function. So you're still unable to move. So the sensation of something being on you or something being around is very strong. What I always experience with it is, if you imagine your body, sounds so corny, but your body vibrates, right, with a life force or whatever. And I would never have known that or even been able to describe it unless I'd experienced sleep paralysis. But when I experienced that vibration stopped, and it was like being dead. There was nothing. There was no sense of life in my limbs or anything. It was like you know, and it's not like my heart stopped beating or anything like that. But if you imagine that you have a life force or your body vibrates at a certain whatever, then when I was suffering sleep paralysis, I was flatlined. There was no vibration to my body. My bodily functions were still going on, but there was no, that vibratory force was gone. And I remember thinking as I was laying there, that vibration is life and now I'm dead. And then after a long time, it finally went away, but it was pretty horrifying when it happened. And that's the best way I can describe it.
Wow.
Did you try to move yourself mm-hmm. out of it?
Yeah. And I tried to yell for help. I kept thinking if I could just scream help, then someone can come get me. And I didn't feel like anybody was on top of me or I never felt the presence that a lot of people feel. I just thought, I'm dead. I'm still conscious, but I'm dead. My body's no longer vibrating. That was what I was thinking in my head, was that I couldn't feel it. And the only way I can describe it, or the only thing I thought of it as, was my life force, that it was gone. And I thought, if I could just scream help, then wow. someone would get yeah. me out of this. And then it kept happening. And it only happens, I mean, I can't even remember the last time it happens. It still happens to me once in a great while. If I'm really stressed or upset about something, I will have sleep paralysis.
Yes, that was when it happened to me, is when I was super mm-hmm. stressed. It's like when I went through my episodes of it, I think it was like either my second semester of my sophomore year in college or my first semester of my junior year in college.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
remember. But during that time period, and I remember laying on my side and waking up and having sleep paralysis. And I just remember thinking, like, move your arm, like try to move something. And I had never tried to move just like my fingers. So like my arm was extended out, touching the wall, because my bed was by the wall. And all I could do was like slowly move my fingers across mm-hmm. the wall, and like until I could get myself out of it. And then you just kind of, I don't know. And then it just kind of switches. And it really is like instantaneous. It's kind of like a switch. And then you're just like, oh, I can move. It's very weird. And and like what you described, you know, it's like when one half or one hemisphere is still in that sleep mode and the other hemisphere is in the awake mode. And so like it gets crossed. And I don't know how, you know, and people will intentionally try to do that. And that's how you like lucid dream and mm-hmm. stuff. And that stuff is too scary. That's weird. I don't know about it.
Yeah. I always tell myself, if this happens to me, I won't panic if it happens. But every single time because I think it's the rational part of your brain is still asleep. It's just the animal part of your brain that's awake. And you're like a rat in a trap. You are just like, what's happening to me? I'm dead.
Yeah, no, it's very panic inducing. Seriously, for real, it is. And yeah, like, you know, I always get like a super heavy weight on my chest.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm being pushed down or like held down.
You are. Zozo is there.
Yeah,
and Zozo's holding you down.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's give our Yeti scores for Zozo. I think we're all a 5 as far as the Ouija board itself being a conduit, right? As far as being able to channel some sort of energy.
Yes.
Okay.
So, absolutely.
Yes, okay.
Yes. And levitation.
I'm going to give.
Footnote.
Yeah, I'm a negative 12 on levitation. Andy's a positive 12. Ian, what are you on levitation? You're a negative 2, right? Or
yeah,
are you a positive?
Maybe 3. Negative. Yeah, on the levitation
okay.
part. Yeah.
So what is your Yeti score, you guys, for Zozo?
Whether in 110.
And whether or not you think,
I mean, 5.
Whether demon, tulpa, thought form, whatever, is Zozo a real phenomenon in whatever you view Zozo of being? Is he a 1 to a 5? Where's your score at?
I think, how can you not? Because so many people, I have heard about this Zozo before, I think, if I'm remembering. I think I have. Since we've talked about it, it's been bringing back, I think I've heard about it on some shows mm-hmm. before. And I think that, yes, but it might, and I don't know. Do we have to just stick with Zozo, or can it just be demons in general? Does
no.
it have to be just Zozo?
Yeah, because it matters.
I think because we're specifically talking about Zozo in this episode, it's we're just giving a Yeti score for Zozo.
Okay. Yes. 5.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to do a 4 and say that Zozo is a tulpa.
Okay. And where are you on the scale 1 to 5 for the tulpa?
Oh,
a 4. Okay. I'm a 4 for the Zozo phenomena as a whole. I don't know what he is. I'm leaning toward tulpa, but I also do think I have to say demon is a possibility. I do agree with you on some level, Andy, but I'm a 4. 4 to 4.5.
Nice.
So there we go.
All right. Well, groovy.
Okay. So next week, our episode will be vampires, special episode there. And then we'll be having some other good stuff coming as well, which I'm really looking forward to.
Okay. And we want you to feel free to email us at jenandandy@ichabodshouse.com with any story ideas, comments on Zozo, comments on Black Eyed Kids, comments on the Falk Monster, story ideas. Just reach out and say, hey, we love that. And thank you so much for your support. This has been such a success so far. We're just so thankful and so honored that you guys are listening and that you like it.
We are. We're having a great time, and we'll try and keep bringing you good stuff. If you have any suggestions, let us know. We'd be happy to bring you what you want to hear.
For sure.
All right. So until next time, Ichabod loves you.
And remember, carry a flashlight and bring extra pants.